So, you know, you need ideas like that to get things going. Now, also, don't forget, the Civic Light Opera was one of the more notable institutions that they had here, cultural institutions, and had a big following and a lot of leadership, and it was the big thing. It had been up in Pitt Stadium, and so that and the arena sort of came together. That's just another example of how you start things, and yet years down the road, the function changes. I think the arena has been a very, very good thing for the city. I think the only mistake that's developed there was not putting the convention center up on the site in conjunction with the arena. I had recommended that, and we had a committee that recommended it, but Pete Flaherty became mayor, and he decided he didn't want it there, so.
What were his objections to locating it there?
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure. Have to ask him.
You'd have to ask him, yeah.
You were formerly board member of the Pittsburgh Zoological Society, the Civic Light Opera, Carnegie Library, American Wind Symphony.
Well,
it certainly covers a wide range. Do you
know? A lot of those members, because I was on city council, some not because of them. I think I was one of the few friends the Wind Symphony had when it started. One of the few friends in public life. They couldn't even get hooked up to electricity when they started. And I thought then, as I do now, that you ought to encourage almost every kind of cultural activity that, you know, it adds to the, I think it adds to the city. And that looked to me like something we should encourage. And they had a very, very energetic director, Boudreau, who's really built it up into a big thing. He's done an amazing job, I think. And we used to try to help all those kind of activities. And I think you need that in a city, and you have to. I used to get a lot of arguments when I was on city council's finance chairman from some of the council people. You know, they didn't like this, and what did we need? And I said, well, I'm not so sure I like. I never enjoyed the Wind Symphony, really. I mean, I didn't like the music. Maybe that was just my lack of knowledge about music. But I thought it was a good thing, and I thought you ought to have a lot of things that some people like, even though a lot of people don't like it, and that adds to the...
That's why we're number one.
Well, that adds to the attraction of the city. So I was... I used to encourage these kind of activities.
What are your current active involvements in civic and community affairs?
Well, let's see. Officially, I don't... you know, I've done a lot of work since then. Basically, in a Jewish organization.
Well, that we're going to deal with.
And on the civic things, we participate, but in a different capacity. I'm not officially involved in a lot of organizations now, and about all. I guess must be getting old because people come to me and ask me, "What do I think about this or that?" So I guess when they ask you that, you're either very rich or very old, you know. So
or very knowledgeable.
Well, I don't know. I think if you get rich enough or old enough, people think you know something. We're involved now. My wife, last couple of years, been very deeply involved in Planned Parenthood. So vicariously, I guess I got involved in that and. And I'm involved politically, and I was chairman for a number of years of a national political PAC. Was the first of the Jewish PACs, as a matter of fact. And I've been very involved politically on the sidelines. And,
I believe you are currently active in local, state, and national Democratic activities.
Yes, yes.
Your biography stated you were a member of the Finance Committee of the Democratic National Committee in Allegheny County.
Well, I was then. I'm still involved with them, but I don't think that means much. You know, I've been a delegate.
You were a delegate in 1976 to the Democratic
Party. Yeah, they wanted me to be a delegate last year, but I told them to select my wife as an alternate, and I just went along as as an observer.
In that 1976 convention, did you have any contact with national figures at all?
Yes, that was the one.
Carter.
Carter, yeah. Well, I was very, I was heavily involved before that in the Scoop Jackson's campaign. Mm-hmm. And he was a candidate I thought we should have nominated, but it just didn't turn out that way.
As far as national contacts with national figures in the 76 campaign, who were some of them?
Well, almost any of the ones that, you know, that participated in the convention, not all of them, but over the years I've become acquainted with a number of the senators, you know, and representatives and political leaders. And for example, it started years and years ago when I remember when it was Dave Lawrence and Jack Arvey, you know, from Chicago, and then Bailey from Connecticut. Those were the three kingmakers at the time.
Well, you were.
I learned a little bit from them in those years, mostly from Dave Lawrence and Joe Barr, and then.
You were active in their campaigns, I believe.
Yeah, and then as the years developed, I got to know a lot of people on the state and the national level. And that's been very interesting and informative and educational.
I believe you were active in the local efforts for Kennedy.
Yes, yes.
Did you ever have any personal contact with him?
Yes. In fact, I have better, or actually closer contacts with Ted than I had with Jack.
I see. Or currently?
Well, currently.
I see.
Currently, I was never a great Kennedy backer during those years. So my contact with the Kennedys has been basically the last 5 years or so with Ted, rather than they were with his brothers.
Around national issues?
On national issues, mm-hmm. and things, yes.
You think he might be a candidate for president one day?
I think he'd like to be, you know.
Despite his denials?
Well, nobody admits they want to be a candidate, and he's never said it to me either, so maybe I don't know what I'm talking about either, but it's most people in political life, I think, would like to be president, so you start with that assumption. If they have a chance at it, I suppose they'd like to take it. He's become a very effective senator now. And we try to help people, we think. When Rockefeller was running last year, we gave him some help and so forth. And as I said, I've gotten to know a number of the senators and congressmen and governors. If you're mixed up long enough in something, you're bound to know some people, you know.
I believe you have national involvement as sponsor of the Coalition for a Democratic Majority and chairman of the National Bipartisan Political Action Committee.
Yeah, but those were much. I was much more active with them in years past, up until the last couple of years. Really, they were. They were composed mostly of supporters of Scoop Jackson. I mean, there was that group of people throughout the country who formed the Coalition for Democratic Majority, and he sponsored it, and they used his name, you know. And then this national pack, we organized it, and that was almost all basically Scoop Jackson kind of supporters. They were Republicans and Democrats, but they all liked Scoop Jackson. And as I said before, that was, I think, the first of the Jewish political action committees.
I'm sort of intrigued with the idea of a bipartisan political action committee. Do they actually see eye to eye on issues?
No. because we don't try to get into too many issues. There were a number of things that PAC was interested in. One was in the relations between the United States and Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So that would cut across party lines.
I see.
And there were certain fundamental domestic issues that they could get together on. No, we didn't try to formulate policy on every issue that came along. And that's what enabled them to stay together. I'd say most of them were people in the middle, you know, some were Democrats and some maybe were a little more liberal than others and some a little less. But and they were basically people who were in the business world, the political world, and they'd been around for a while. So you had a fairly sophisticated group.
And diverse.
Yes.
The Post Gazette, in its February 84 article, states you have seen a lot of politicians come and go in the past 35 years, and that you have been influential in both Allegheny County and national elections. They state you have been described as, quote, kingmaker.
Huh.
Would you like to comment on that
title? Is that the Post Gazette that
says
it?
That's Post Gazette, yeah.
Well, I think they give me more credit than I deserve, but I've often said when you go through life, you get blamed for a lot of things you don't deserve, so you might as well take the credit for things you don't deserve. I don't consider myself a kingmaker at all. There are very few kingmakers, by the way, so that's an overused term. I probably have access to a lot of people because I've been around a long time, and I think I have a lot of credibility with them, and so if you have access to people, then you can talk to them and they talk to you, and so in a small way you may have some small influence, but kingmaker is, there are very few kingmakers. I'm certainly not one of them.
Didn't you read that article, Mr. Baskin?
Yeah, I guess I read that one. And some others, but...
You get
articles that make you look good, and you get articles that make you look bad. That's,
we just remember the good ones. Now, I'd like to deal with your very extensive involvement in Jewish community affairs.
Okay.
First, as a life trustee in Temple Sinai, were you involved in its founding?
Well, no, shortly. I think it was founded in 46 or 47, I forget which year. And I came back from law school in 49, early 49.
I see.
And I joined the Temple then, and it was still very, relatively small. And I've been active in it since.
Why was it established originally?
I think it was really spawned by the Rod of Sholem congregation. There was a feeling among the Reform Jews, and the Rod of Sholem, of course, was the leading Reform institution, and one of the leading in the country, that it was getting too large, and that the Jewish community would be better served if there really were another Reformed congregation. So some of the leading members, Harry Epstein, Lou Kaplan, Leon Falk, who were leading members in Rod of Sholem congregation, helped form the Temple Sinai. And that's how it was created. And since then, it's fastened a pretty good hold in the community. It's probably regarded as a second Reformed congregation in terms of influence in a city and size and so forth and so on. I've been the chairman of its four major fundraisers. 1949, first the Falk Library, Falk Hall, Auditorium Hall. Then and we had to raise some money to help pay for that later. And then we built the the new sanctuary. And now we had an endowment fund. So I've been active in the temple ever since, and I've served as on the board, and I took a position as vice president because I wouldn't have to do much. And then when they wanted to make me president, I said they better get somebody else, because I thought it would be more useful to them if they had somebody who could give it, day-to-day time.
More time.
And so I think there were only three life trustees. I think it was Leon Falk and Luke Kaplan and myself. We were the first three lifetime trustees. Now they have, of course, quite a few more. And it's done well considering the loss of population in the city, including Jewish population. It's really rebuilding its membership now.
What is the size?
I think they're getting up close to, they're above 550 now. One time we were 700.
This is 550 families.
Yes. Mm-hmm. One time I think we were about 700. And then went down to 500. Now it's coming up towards 600. And they practically paid off that whole institution that you see on Forbes and Murdoch. It's a lot of investment. And then they also have a memorial park, which they own. So
this is a cemetery.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So they've done, 49, that's what? It's almost about 35 years. They really accomplished quite a bit, because it's not the most affluent congregation. Rodham Shalom still represents the more affluent part of the Jewish Reformed group. I'd say it's strange. We became more conservative than Rodham Shalom. That is, we had Hebrew and bar mitzvahs when we started, and of course Rodham Shalom wouldn't at that time. Although they have since. They followed suit. Then, in a curious twist a few years ago, I always recommended to our congregation that we have intermarriages, on certain conditions, but that we have them, and that our rabbis be selected who would officiate them. So I got in a fight with a rabbinate. It was a scholarly discussion. But the strange thing was that Rodham Shalom took the Orthodox kind of view. When I say Orthodox, I don't mean Orthodox. I mean the more Orthodox kind of view, and said that the rabbis shouldn't officiate. Now here was one of the most liberal Reformed congregations in the country, taking what's really a more conservative stance,
more
traditional. And here's this little upstart taking the less traditional. So that was a curious.
Did they perform any intermarriages?
Yes, at Temple Sinai. Yes. I still think.
What do they require?
Well, they have some sessions with a rabbi. They'd like them to convert if they want to, but they don't make it a condition. I always felt, and the congregation I think feels that way basically, that over the years you're going to get more and more of these intermarriages, and it's very difficult in this kind of society to keep people balkanized almost religiously, and if you see something coming, you've got to make some changes. And if you're going to keep the membership of your temples and try to keep people as Jews and children who are being born, that you shouldn't turn away people who say they're willing to do it, even if you don't think they're going into a mikveh, you know? And it seemed to me that if a Jewish woman were marrying a non-Jewish man and he was willing to have the service by a rabbi and willing to have a family continue as a Jewish family, and particularly have the children educated there.
Is that a requirement that's on it?
Well, you can't, you know, what's the use of making anything a requirement? You can then get married and not do it, so what's the point of making it a requirement?
they request this, is what I'm saying.
Well, the suggestion's made, and usually these couples want to do it that way, otherwise they wouldn't be there. Sometimes you get somebody who just says, yeah, I'll go along, but I think we've been fairly successful with a lot of those people, and you know, the more intermarriages you get, you've got to find different ways of coping with it. And I don't think you can cope with it just by the Orthodox insistence, you know, that they convert and immediately become an Orthodox Jew. I just don't think it's going to work. No, I may be wrong, but
no, it doesn't seem realistic then.
No, and I think the rabbinate now is looking at the problem a little differently than perhaps they looked at it, although their official position, you know, is still not too enthusiastic about it, to say the least, but they have to look at it differently, there's no question about it. So it's strange that we were the innovators in that, and Rav Sholem was not. I always thought that was a little...
That's an interesting observation. I hadn't thought about it that way, but it's true. You were also a board member of the Jewish Community Center.
Yeah, when I was in, I started with Luke Kaplan's office as an attorney, and I happened to get in at the time when they were doing two things. One, they were combining the Community Center with Irene Kaufman Center. You remember they were separate.
Yes, I remember that. That was quite an issue for us.
Yeah, yes, and I did a lot of work on that. And then the other thing that we did was to combine the Jewish Philanthropies and the United Jewish Appeal into the UJF. That was done when I was with Luke Campbell. So I was very deeply involved in both of those reorganizations, and so I got to learn a lot about the Jewish community that way too.
I understand there are plans for expansion, for a new facility.
Yeah, they're in it now. I'm not participate too much in that, but they, you know, they sold the Jewish community, the Y building. They're going to move out, I think, someplace in Squirrel Hill. They're talking about a site. I think they have a site that they'd like to use.
And where would that be?
Well, I think there's an old, what's the old school?
The Whiteman School?
Is it not the Whiteman School, the other one, I think.
Davis. Davis?
Maybe, I think that's a site that they were talking about. Years ago, I had thought that all the Jewish organizations should build one large center in Panther Hollow, you know, time, and so that all the services and the computer service could be installed, which would, and a printing shop, which could serve them all, you know, and so forth. But I didn't get too far with that, so I'm not saying it would have worked, but I thought it was a good idea.
They weren't too successful in the East End branch that they attempted.
I was not a great proponent of that, and I wasn't a great proponent of the what they wanted to start out in the South Hills. The reason I wasn't a great proponent of the East End branch was when they tried to get some contributions from the local people. They were very, very disappointed. And I always thought that if people really are interested in the facility, they'll work to get it.
And they'll sponsor it,
or they'll support it more actively. So I said my position was, if they weren't that interested in it, why should you put something out there?
You were right.
Well, you know, I happen to be right on that one. Yeah.
It lasted for
And I was against going out to the South Hills for the same reason. I said those people, the more affluent society, they have institutions now. They can do all kinds of things. You don't have to put some of the facilities out there that you have to put in the city where people don't have other facilities available to them and aren't as affluent.
But they do have active programming in the South.
Yes, Eastern, yes, right? But not. I never felt they should build a large facility out there.
I see. Yeah. Well, there's a substantial Jewish population.
There is,
now,
but I don't think it's the kind of area. It needs programming, it needs participation and involvement, but I don't think it needs a physical. Those people don't need it, you know.
A facility
like you do for people who don't have the money to afford it as well and so forth. So I never think you ought to build facilities just for the sake of saying you have a facility there. You ought to build it where it's needed.
You were also a board member of the Jewish Community Relations Council.
Mm-hmm.
What is this exactly?
Jewish Human Relations Council is sort of a coordinating group of a lot of the various Jewish organizations, which involves itself on issues that become public. Sometimes they keep it from becoming public, and that's to maintain relationships basically with non-Jewish groups and to get into problems either after they arise or before they arise.
Anticipating.
Yes. Different relationships between basically Jews and non-Jews, and also between the blacks and the Jews. They were very involved in that activity, and so they're sort of a coordinating unit for a lot of the different Jewish organizations in town. First, we have a lot of people. The AJC says they do it. You know, I'm a board.
Do they overlap?
Well, we have a lot of Jewish organizations that overlap. You know,
Are you still actively involved?
You know the old story. You have two Jews. You have three temples.
Yes. I've heard that. What is the American Jewish Committee? I believe you were a board member there.
Yes, and the American Jewish Committee was really formed years ago, and that was mostly really the German Jews, and more the upper class German Jews. It was really a very non-Orthodox group in terms of religious persuasion. They were people who would more normally join the Rosh Hashanah at that time. They were reformed in terms of their Jewishness, and they were more affluent than most of the Jews. And they started as a group to work behind the scenes with political leaders to try to work out Jewish problems as they arose, you know. And I think that they still maintained a different. They've changed, I think, as almost all those institutions have changed. They're more. I think they're a little more representative of the general community now, but still not. In other words, I don't think it's a broad group across the spectrum of the Jewish community, but it has served a very useful function.
In what respect? I'm not clear.
Well, they were able to make contact with a lot of leaders in the non-Jewish circles, a lot of political leaders, because of their position in the country's industrial and affairs, and so they had contacts which a lot of Jewish organizations didn't have. So they worked at a different level
for influencing policy.
Trying to solve some problems on anti-Semitism, problems between Jews and other groups, and they maintained a very behind-the-scenes stance. Matter of fact, just hated to get any kind of publicity at all. You can see that group sort of changed too, although it's still, as I said, is not as broad-based as some of the other Jewish groups.
We're going to have to stop here.
Okay.
The tape is getting pretty low.
We're getting a wealth of information.